Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app, at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to keep listening, you can do so on the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. We're also streaming live on iHeartRadio, as well as TuneIn Radio. You can check us out on both of those apps as well. Check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. Did you realize that we are one day away from opening day?
So I realized that yesterday in the middle of a break when it occurred to me that the Netflix standalone game counts.
My bigger question is, When did Netflix get in on this whole thing?
So I knew Netflix was going to be involved. I did not.
Are they taking over like the Friday Apple TV Plus spot or whatever?
That's a great question. How many games do they have?
I have no idea. Because I would just remember going like, what is it? The last couple years being like, okay, great. If by the grace of anyone, the Rays were on Apple TV Plus, I'm like, well, I paid for MLB TV, and I can't watch this. Shocking, I know.
All right, so according to Gemini, they're going to have the opening night. They will have the home run derby and then the Field of Dreams games.
And that's it?
Correct, but they hired, like, Barry Bonds. They apparently put together quite the star-studded cast for basically three events.
Nice. Putting that
Surely there has to be more.
There's got to be, right? Like, because you know good and well, if Barry Bonds is involved, he's not doing it for free.
All right, so here's what we've got. Major League Baseball announced a new streaming partnership with Netflix. The streaming partnership will add MLB to its expanding sports portfolio beginning in 2026. From 26 to 28, Netflix will be the exclusively stream the first game of MLB's regular season, featuring an opening night in primetime. Additionally, Netflix will hold the rights to the T-Mobile Home Run Derby. And yeah, and then the Field of Dreams game. I'm showing three games. So I guess
not even three games.
Sorry, three events.
Because that just says Home Run Derby.
Correct.
That doesn't include the actual All-Star game, does it?
No, it does not. Let's welcome in Tim Murray to the program. Do you guys have any more insight?
Tim is in on this too.
Yeah, totally. Totally knew about this for a long time, not just finding out about it yesterday.
Three events?
I guess this works. What's the last game on Sunday night? Right? Because don't we go afternoon and we pull it up? I have the schedule. Okay. Well, no, I have the Sweet 16 schedule. But don't we do like 2 and 5 on Sunday for basketball?
Sounds right. Yeah, I think it's a little earlier.
And then does that go straight into Sunday Night Baseball?
Oh, is that the issue? That NBC has Sunday Night Baseball?
Yeah.
The bastardization of opening day is just something that drives me insane. Like, opening day, the Reds get their parade. We start at noon Eastern with Cincinnati, and that's opening day. That's from a Cardinals fan.
This could also just be me. If it's opening day, every team should be playing. Every team should get started on opening day.
I tend to agree after the Reds play.
Yeah, that's fine. It doesn't matter when they all start.
The Reds get to start.
Perfectly fine. I have no issue with that.
I think there's a larger question here, Tim. I'd be curious to know your thoughts. Has the Giants' search for more TV money led to a better product? Any sport?
I don't think so.
Because my bigger deal is I understand why they chase it, but everyone starts messing with their schedule, and once you start messing with your schedule, that's when everyone starts to be like, wait a minute, we've got what here? What? Like, you get out of a routine.
Yeah. Now, I will say, with the NFL opening on Wednesday night this year, because of the Australia game, and I believe that'll be Thursday, and we have to have the Seahawks open up the season, I'm not going to be upset about it.
No, but I also think that, like, diminishes the whole idea that you win the Super Bowl, you get to open the season.
Well, they are opening the season.
I thought we're going to be opening on Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday with the Seahawks. Thursday will be Australia. I thought that's what we had.
I thought it's Thursday in Australia, Wednesday in the United States, and then Thursday we'll go to Seattle.
You just said two different things.
Okay.
Wednesday.
Are you aware that are you aware that Australia is ahead of us, not behind us, in on the time?
Correct.
So I thought they are playing Thursday in Australia, which would be Wednesday night here.
Oh.
And I believe that that's what the Rams and the Niners, correct?
Yeah, Rams, Niners. I thought, I don't know, you could be right. I thought Seattle was going to open up on Wednesday night in the States, and then Thursday, however they configured it, Thursday in the United States, Friday in Australia would be 49ers and Seahawks, or 49ers, Rams. But you could be right.
I'm not, you're saying it enough to where I don't confidently. So maybe they would be playing. Because they're not going to do the thing where they play Saturday in Australia, Friday here,
yeah,
and then fly back.
The kickoff Wednesday, September 9th with the Seahawks on NBC.
Okay, so they moved that game up. Okay, that's fine. And so that means, do we also know what time in the States the Australia game's going to be?
I don't think so.
I assume it's going to be prime time.
That would be my guess. So that would mean, what, Friday early afternoon, Friday morning? I'm not sure. I don't think that has been set yet.
This is okay, so at least the Seahawks get to kick off the.
Yeah, the Seahawks are still kicking off the season.
All right, so that would be September 9th and then September 10th. Okay, let's tell everybody we got coming up on the program. We'll get into our thoughts from the opening weekend of college basketball. I'll get Tim's thoughts on what we all watched. We will hand out some awards like we do during the college football season. We'll do that next segment. Hour number two, we'll get into the list, and Eric Hasseltine is going to join the program. Hour number three, we'll get into the college basketball coaching carousel. I've been seeing Tim with some thoughts on that as well. A couple of named moves, what's going to happen with North Carolina, what will happen with Kansas. Talk about that. We also have another NFL mock draft. We'll hopefully get to that throughout the program. But I think let's start here, Tim. How would you grade the first weekend?
So I was asked this yesterday. Maybe I was being a little too harsh. I said on a 1 to 10, I gave it a 4.
All right.
I think as I reflect, I probably would bump that up to like a 5.5 or 6, because I think there were some really good games. Santa Clara, Kentucky was really good. High Point, Wisconsin, really good. Nebraska and Vanderbilt was top notch. Iowa, Florida. So I think I would bump it up a little bit. The stretch run we had from Friday to, what was that, early Sunday, where I think every betting favorite won, that's what kind of hurt me, in the sense that we just had no craziness. But if you take a step back, I think it was fine. It was not spectacular, but I think it was better than what my initial grade on Monday was, which was a 4.
Do you recall how you would have graded the first weekend last year?
I don't. I think I would have graded it worse.
Okay, because I think my general takeaway is we just had the exact same tournament. You ready for the numbers?
Yep.
Okay. We had 12 of the 16 top 4 seeds advance. The difference last year was we had a 2 seed in St. John's lose. This year we had a 1 seed in Florida lose. We had 11 teams from the SEC and the Big Ten last year. We had 10 teams from the SEC and the Big Ten this year advance. We had 3 Big 12 teams advance this year, 2 Big East, 1 ACC. Last year, we had, let's see, I believe it was 7 SEC, 4 Big Ten, Texas Tech Big 12, Arizona Big 12, BYU, 3 Big 12, 1 Big East, 1 ACC. The average seed that advanced last year was 3.4. The average seed that advanced this year was 3.7. The average field seed, so seeding at 1 through 68, the average field seed that advanced this year was 13.9. Last year was 12 flat. And I think we had roughly the same amount of upsets. I think last year we had... So last year we had 2 12 over 5s, an 11 over 6, and a 10 over a 2. This year we had 1-12-5, right?
1-12-5, yep. No 13 over 14. Seeds 1, 2, 3, and 4 went undefeated for a second straight year.
All right, here we go. I have it. All right. So we had a 12 over 5, an 11 over 6 with Texas over BYU, an 11 over 6 with VCU over North Carolina, an 11 over a 3, and a 9 over a 1. So I believe that's one additional upset from last year. Because last year we had 2 12 5s. Not going to mention one of those. We had an 11 over a 6 and a 10 over a 2. So what the NCAA would deem as a 5 seed upset or a seed line difference of 5 places, we had 4 last year, and I believe we had 5 this year. Is that correct, or did we do 4 and 4?
I think it was the
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 5 this year, 4 last year. I also felt like, in general, the standalone games stunk, but I thought, compared to last year, I thought the second round games were better overall.
Yeah, off the top of my head, trying to think back, like I said, Nebraska-Vanderbilt, very good. Arkansas-High Point was entertaining.
Yes.
Texas-Gonzaga, I thought was
A good game.
I thought Michigan-St. Louis for the first 20 minutes was pretty entertaining because you were getting some really good shot making from St. Louis, and then eventually they just kind of ran out of gas. Purdue-Miami was really good, I thought.
Until I still have no idea why Jay Lucas fouled.
With up down 4 with 58 seconds
left. I have no idea what they were doing.
Yeah, not that I had Miami plus 8 or anything.
What do you think I have?
Arizona-Utah State was actually pretty entertaining for
Agreed.
The most part. I mean, Arkansas-Texas Tech was a dud. St. John's-Kansas.
Bama.
I'm sorry, yeah, Alabama-Texas Tech. I can't decide because the finish was exciting. I kind of think St. John's-Kansas was a terrible basketball game.
No, I agree with you. I think the way that the game concluded
masks how the game was.
Now, I think you could also make the argument that was the moment that Sunday flipped into being better.
Yeah.
Because St. John's worked really hard to not win that game by double figures.
Yeah, that was... So, From a betting standpoint, I had Miami and then I had Kansas. And I was like, you know what? Probably deserve to be 1-1 out of that. So I'll take it.
Because, like, I'm looking back at last year's second round games. Okay, Florida UConn was a very good game. Maryland Colorado State gave us the buzzer beater.
Yep.
Texas Tech Drake was not a good game or watch. Arkansas over St. John's was fun in the sense of Calipari versus Pitino, but I mean, Arkansas pretty much controlled the entire game. Then we had Duke Baylor, which was an absolute shellacking. Arizona Oregon was a good game. BYU Wisconsin was a heck of a game. Bama St. Mary sucked. Houston Gonzaga was one of those weird games where Houston controlled the whole game and Gonzaga somehow kind of made it close enough at the end. Maybe a la St. John's, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue McNeese State stunk. Kentucky Illinois, not that much fun. Tennessee UCLA was not that much fun. Like, we basically had the same tournament. And I remember thinking last year, I graded it like a B. I actually felt like this weekend, I felt like we had a higher volume of good games, and I kind of was willing to give it like a B+. And I am typically normally a tough grader.
Yeah, I think I can't say the actual line, but in 40-Year-Old Virgin, they say they put something on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Seen the movie. Yeah, yeah. I put this tournament on a pedestal, so I'm very critical of it. But I think as I take a step back, there were some moments where I was like, yeah, that was pretty good. You remember the David Pumpkin sketch in SNL? The 100 Floors of Fright. It was like a Halloween thing. Well, Tom Hanks or Keenan's in it. And he's like, well, it's 100 Floors of Fright. You're not going to get all winners. It's like, yeah, I mean, you got all these games. They're not all going to be winners. I mean,
that's not my SNL era.
Oh, man. You've never seen David Pumpkins? Come on. It was like the most viral thing for like a good chunk. But regardless.
I mean, I love Keenan, but.
And Tom Hanks is the host. Regardless, Thursday we had VCU UNC collapse, entertaining game. TCU, I will say, tip of the cap to the schedule makers because the two games that opened Thursday and Friday both were hits.
Yes.
TCU Ohio State, very good. And obviously Santa Clara Kentucky was maybe the best game, I don't know, top three games so far of this tournament. So I will say that looking ahead to this weekend, all of these matchups are pretty appealing, right? Like there's no, I mean, yes, there is a double digit favorite. Michigan's a double digit favorite over Bama, but you could see.
I think it's
back down to 9.5 at one spot. It's kind of been hanging around 10.5, 9. I mean, the two biggest spreads of the weekend are Arkansas, Arizona, and Alabama, Michigan. And you could absolutely talk yourself into Alabama going nuclear from three like they did in the second round or like they did against BYU last year.
And really, I'd make the argument like they did starting in the second half against Hofstra. Yep. And then on Sunday night.
So you could talk yourself into that. And then, you know, Arkansas will have the best player in the game. Now, do they have enough depth to make it competitive for 40 minutes?
The Brazil status is a big deal for me.
Yeah, I mean.
Because you saw when Brazil left the floor, High Point was able to score again. Because
mm-hmm.
Arkansas was kind of close to putting that away. Brazil bangs up his shoulder. Goes out, High Point goes full, you know, pedal to the metal. And then you could tell when they brought Brazil back in, that's kind of when they were able to put some distance in between them.
Man, Darius Acuff, as much as I love him, man, he is a come on through type of deal from a defensive standpoint.
We have to save our legs for offense. I mean, he's going to play 40 freaking minutes. Listen, I'm just not here for the slander. I saw a lot of heroes finding some SEC tournament tape, to which I still point out, like, Arkansas kind of knows the drill, which is like, all right, we're going to probably get into these shootouts, but in the end, we've got him, you don't.
Yep.
Now, that's quite the bold strategy against Arizona.
Yeah. The size could be an issue, and it's not like they have a bunch of
I think depth could be a huge issue, too.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really want to take Arkansas. I have not bet that game yet.
I'm hoping it bounces back up.
Did you see the stat about this point spread? So the point spread is 8. There's an 8.5 out there. There's a 7.5 out there, but we'll call it 8. This is the biggest underdog Cal has ever been in the NCAA tournament.
That's interesting.
Previous high was the Final Four in 96, UMass, Kentucky.
I would imagine, though, do we have historical point spreads for some of those early teams?
Evan Abrams does a pretty good job over at Action Network finding this stuff, so I think he did
I think they use Bet Labs.
Yeah, they do. So he's usually pretty good at finding all of this, and if he doesn't go back all the way, he'll kind of
note it.
And he's also pretty good in the dog role. We saw it last year against St. John's. I think he covered both games as an underdog last year in the tournament. So,
also covered the Texas Tech line, did not win outright.
Correct. And I'm trying to talk myself into this Arkansas side here, but it's gonna be a challenge.
But I think this is a big weekend for Tommy Lloyd.
I would agree. I mean, there's no excuse to not emerge out of this region. And I know Purdue's playing well. There's no excuse. And it's year 5. And, you know, I was talking about this last night on VSiN, and, you know, Humans, who's my co-host, said, you know, it's a small sample size. And he brought up the fact that Jay Wright was criticized, and it's true. Jay Wright forever was criticized that, hey, you can never win the big one, and then he wins 2 national titles. So it's very early. He's had some ugly losses, but a lot of coaches have had ugly losses. He's got to win this region. Like, they're going to be, if they win and Purdue wins, they're going to be about a 6-point favorite probably over Purdue, maybe 5. And Purdue's a veteran team, but this team is just built to to win this region.
I haven't looked. Steve at VSiN does a great job on the power ratings.
Oh, Mackinnon.
Steve Mackinnon. He did a great, like, look ahead. I was trying to think. I think you're probably right. My guess would be somewhere in that 5.5 point.
Based off KenPom right now, would be 6 off of their net rating. By the way, did you see the net rating difference between Michigan, Arizona, and Duke over at KenPom? It's 1/100th of a point.
Yeah,
Michigan and Arizona are the same, and Duke is 1/100th of a point behind Michigan and Arizona.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of the other aspect of, you know, when we talk about the death of the Cinderella, I think there's a lot of things at play, not just simply NIL and transfer portal, which I think is clearly if we're doing a pie chart, that takes up a pretty good sliver. I would also argue, I think in terms of the mechanics of the tournament, a bigger development than death of Cinderella's were better at seeding the tournament. I think wins over bubble has been, I think wins over a bubble is a better addition than even net was over RPI.
Yeah, we get rid of last 10 and all of that stuff
too. Well, and on top of that, with wins over bubble, the reason why I like wins over bubble, it's less predictive. It's more of what have you accomplished, and it gives a school like Miami of Ohio, who has a terrible strength of schedule, as my buddy David Cobb pointed out, like, yeah, they're winning 5 cents every game, but it kind of added up, and so they do get credit for that versus you also get credit for the big wins. Like, I do think I think wins over bubble has been one of the best additions in terms of metrics that we've seen. And then furthermore, like, we are trying to, we're not just like saying, all right, Kansas won 22 games, they're a three seed. You know what I mean? Like, we're doing a better job of making sure the right teams are seeded properly.
Well, and I think to extend that, look, is Cinderella dead? I think she's on life support. I don't think she's dead, but, I mean, High Point had a chance to beat Arkansas. They hung around a lot more than I thought. I thought Arkansas's athleticism would own the day. But what we are seeing, and I'm never going to call Texas or even Iowa,
that's that we're getting into this spot where it's like, okay, we need to define what Cinderella is. And if we're saying the mid-major, sure, because to your point, we're having to we're doing a similar situation to what we did last year of, you know, our little Cinderella was Arkansas with like a $10 million payroll. This year, Texas, I would presume, is in the eight figures in terms of roster. And there are Cinderella. There are darling.
I mean, honestly, Iowa, I guess you could call Cinderella because of their story, right? Their head coach was a Division II head coach 2 years ago. Their best player played for him in that D2 school. Their second best player in Banks was at JUCO. And then they went to Drake together, and now they're here at Iowa. Like, the story of Iowa, but it's still Iowa. It's still a Big Ten team that has Big Ten money behind it. But I think if you're talking about higher-seeded teams like Iowa and Texas, I don't think those are going away. Arkansas last year.
Yeah.
Because what happened? Those teams just didn't come together, and you might get that in the NIL era, and then you get into the dance, you get a little groove going, you've got a ton of talent, and you're able to make a run. So you've got an 11 seed in Texas who's facing the Big Ten tournament champion at Purdue, who's eighth in the country in KenPom, and they're only a 6-point underdog. Like, that's not Cinderella.
Yeah, I think what we've seen throughout the NIL era, which it goes a little counterintuitive to your point about, we've seen a lot of the best teams in the last 2 years separate themselves. But I do think what we've seen with the NIL is that we have squeezed, we definitely see it more in college football. I am not sure that Indiana would beat, you know, pick your favorite, Saban first, you know, the first half of the dynasty, pick your favorite Saban team. I'm not even sure they beat one of those Georgia teams, but that's not the point of the sport. The point is play who it is. But what I think we've done is we've compressed, we've moved the top down, and we've moved the bottom up, and we've made this mushier middle. And to your point, I don't think the 11 seed Texas, who has a ton of talent and was expected to be good before the season, like, maybe they didn't put together the regular season that they should have, a la Arkansas last year, but they're still good and they got a good draw.
You got a good draw. They have a good coach, highly paid coach, and now here they are, and they've got a chance. We saw it with NC State. NC State made a run to the Final Four, right? They got hot. They won the ACC. They make a run to the Final Four. So I think we're going to see more of that. And I think it is good for the sport that at least one of the one seeds got knocked off. Did it have to happen in the second round? I just thought watching Ben McCollum execute his game plan to perfection, it reminded me, man, coaching still matters. Yes, you need to have the dudes, but coaching matters. And Ben McCollum, he's getting his flowers right now, the head coach of Iowa, and he should. And I thought the game plan that they had was executed to perfection. If I told you, hey, Jeffrey, Iowa's a 10-point underdog, Bennett Sturts is going to go 0-9 from 3, how much money would you have bet on Florida?
All of it.
Yeah. And they won the bleeping game.
Well, let's talk about that last play. So I saw people dug up Golden. KenPom has always advocated in certain circumstances, even being up 2, fouling.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we think they were trying to do and they couldn't foul? Because it kind of blew me away. I mean, credit to McCollum. That was such a great play because it was going to either be they got Sturts going in full speed and there was only going to be one defender and the defender was going to be in conflict. Do I take Sturts or do I sag off and give up the corner three? He took Sturts, sagged off, gave up the corner three. Guy didn't rotate in time to get a hand in the face. Great play. That also felt very easy for Sturts to get into the open floor.
The pass, so let's just go back. The pass to get it to Sturts is actually a really good pass.
Because he does get it to him in stride. He leads him. It's like a quarterback throwing a guy open.
Right on his tail, like right behind him. If that's thrown an inch behind Sturts, it's deflected, maybe even stolen. It's a perfect pass. And, yeah, I mean, the play is executed to absolute perfection. Now, I think the nitpicking you could do is say, why don't you throw two people on Sturts? Like, you just make sure he does not get the ball.
I'm trying to remember, were they guarding the ball?
They were, yes. They had a man on the ball, and Sturts comes off of a screen, and Flan is just slightly behind him. So Bennett Sturts starts at like about 10 feet in front of half court and runs off of a screen. It's more of like a rub. And because it was off of a made basket, the Iowa guy can run the baseline. So he gets a little bit of a running start and throws it to Sturts perfectly in stride. And then number seven, the guy who hits the three, he started at half court and he fades to the corner. And Sturts bounces it to him perfectly, and he buries the three.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a well-executed play. And then, you know, you contrast it with Florida's response where, I mean, was really the idea to get Lee coast-to-coast in 4 seconds and in time to dump it off?
I thought he should have just gone up with it and with their trees try to get a tip in. And I wonder if that was the plan.
It looked to me like he knew what he was doing, where he was trying to. I think the problem was Iowa held him up just enough. Like, they let him catch it, but then they kind of cut him off, and then they had the defenders at the three, and so he kind of had to weave his way through traffic, and it just took too long. Like, to me, that's a play you can run with like 7 seconds. That did not feel like a play to try and execute with 4 seconds.
So I got a quick story about the ending of this game. So we've got this competition going on over at VSIN with 15 different people. We have to make all – we made, 15 picks in the first round and 8 in the second round. So one of my picks was under in Iowa, Florida. The total was 145.5. Score was 72-70. And I'm sitting there in my living room and I'm going – you got to go for the win.
Got to go for the three.
Got to go for the win. You're Iowa. You got to go for the win. And they hit the corner three. And now I had a future on Florida, so I was a little bummed. But I'm like, somehow, some way, magically, it stayed under. I want to go to the other ending. I know we're up against a break here. The Dylan Darling game winner is getting a lot of run because of Rick Pitino and what he said post game. And I thought it was great in classic Rick Pitino fashion. And I'm not trying to, like, it's in the moment. I'm not trying to poo-poo.
I have receipts if people want to say that I'm Monday morning quarterbacking.
What the heck was Darren Peterson doing on this play? So,
I thought you wanted to go back further. I thought Self made the right call to foul, but they fouled too early.
Oh, I thought.
I thought what they should have started doing, because I was sitting around we had a couple members of the syndicate, and we were all talking about, we totally agreed with wasting the fouls, but they fouled like as soon as the ball got inbounded, they started then like, no, let them get past half court and then start fouling, like start fouling around, you know, 10 seconds, because then you got to the point where they wasted the fouls, and now there's 3 seconds left.
I almost had an aneurysm when they fouled immediately. because I didn't realize they had only two team fouls.
Well, we did see a couple. Like, I understand where you were, because there were a couple of instances this weekend where guys were fouling in situations where they did not need to foul. Like, I'm setting aside Miami-Purdue. Like, you can, like, I think that was poor strategy, but like, you can make an argument. You're down, try to extend the game right. as long as possible. Like, that makes sense. There were guys that were like fouling in tie games.
Oh, once again, I don't know why this just came up to me, but my last high school basketball game, we were tied in overtime. I tied the game up, and our guard fouled a player on the other team. I'm like, what the hell are you doing, dude? Look up at the scoreboard. He's like, oh, man, my bad. I'm like, yeah, and we lost. But Darren Peterson, and once again, he's probably just trying to go out to make sure, because they're running the guy he was guarding off of a bit of a screen to try to get a free throw line extended three-pointer. But I'm like, don't you have to stay and help if you see Darling coming? And I guess it's just, that's really nitpicking, but I don't think he has time to kick it to the corner for a three. But that was the one thing that jumped out to me. But
so the only thought I had on that was, when you watched from the sideline hard cam, you're going, my God, they gave him a freaking layup. Like, that's it. When they showed the behind the goal angle, and you realize, like, I get it, it's still a layup, it's close, but he basically threw it over his head with spin. Like, they made it a tough shot. I do think what they were basically, I felt like they were saying they wanted Darling to be the guy to beat him.
He hadn't scored all game.
I think that was what, that was how I viewed that.
So, and I know we'll talk more about it. I thought it was pretty interesting during the game when they did the first, I think it was the first half, and Pitino was like, yeah, they think we can't shoot, so we're just going to keep shooting. I'm like, well, you guys can't shoot.
It was a tough watch until, like, really what, the last 3-4 minutes? Like,
I don't know if that was a good game. Great finish. Was it a good game?
No, that was ugly. Whenever you'll see this more in football, and I use the example, like, it's an NCAA tournament close game where it was not really a work of art, and the finish.
Like, I thought Iowa-Florida was
a much better game.
Awesome game.
Correct. I agree. Right? Well, Vanderbilt, Nebraska was a phenomenal game.
And the atmosphere was outrageous. Like, you just don't, I feel like you don't get that a ton in these first two rounds, but the atmosphere in Oklahoma City with those crazy Nebraska fans was, I mean, it sounded like a home game.
No, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see, does Houston have this massive advantage that everyone's expecting? All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will recap the best and the worst from week one of the NCAA tournament. Our first weekend awards, we'll hand them out next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, something we do during football season when we recap the big weekends, we hand out some awards. Which team impressed you the most this weekend?
Well, I think you have the obvious, Iowa. This is a team that went 10-10 in the Big Ten, and they were able to knock off the stud of all studs, Florida. But I'll give honorable mention, Siena.
Yes. With five guys, literally.
With five dudes. And High Point. I mean, Wisconsin is a team, and I think we said it on this show, I thought had the upside of making a run to the Final Four.
Yep.
They beat Michigan. They beat Illinois twice. They beat Purdue. They beat Michigan State. I mean, those are all teams still dancing, and they beat all of them. So to High Point to beat them, and then to really give a scare into Arkansas, and you mentioned a good point about Brazil and the injury and how things kind of changed a little bit then, but I mean, Rob Martin, that guard, number three, that dude, he was giving it to Darius Acuff. Now, Acuff was giving it right back offensively, but I think High Point and Siena, very impressive, but I'll give Iowa the victory since they did beat Florida, a team that many, including yours truly, thought would win the national title.
I had two, and I'm going to go with, I found myself impressed with Illinois. So VCU led 28-26 with 3:09 remaining in the first half. Illinois scores 106 points in both second halves, plus 39. They trailed for just 3:31. Like, once they flipped the switch, it was night-night. Same thing against Penn, where I think Penn, that was one of those games that if you took Penn in the points, for the first half you were feeling pretty good, and then you blinked and that game was over with. The other thought I had was Houston just doing exactly what they do. They trailed 12-9 against Idaho and then outscored them 69-35. Nice. They trailed just 5:03 throughout the tournament. But I'm going to give it to Illinois. I thought Illinois was about as businesslike as you could be this entire first weekend, and I felt like they went under the radar. Unfortunately, yeah, those two teams play each other.
Yeah, and Illinois, we've seen this with Illinois, and I think in totality in the first two rounds, like three favorites, which tell you how my weekend went. But Illinois was one of them against Penn. I was like, this team can just bully people, and they can go nuclear. And I was watching that first half, and to your point, I'm like, really? They're going to mess around?
This is what I get.
Like, they're going to play with their food here, and then they said, don't worry, we got you, big guy. And that second half was pure dominance. Their issue all year has been winning close games,
yep.
Right? They blow teams out, and they lose close games. They are, what, 0-4 in overtime this year, lost to Nebraska by 3, lost to Bama by 4, and, you know, Michigan beat them up decently as well. But, yeah, I mean, that's a game. You mentioned the home court advantage for Houston, potentially. That should be a really fun one on Thursday night.
Least impressive team.
Gonzaga's up there.
Okay. I would have warned you. Although I was
I had Texas, so I didn't bet.
Well, I was trying to get Texas's scalp, so.
So I had to I guess I'll go mid-major.
All right.
Akron. Okay. I thought I would get more from them. And I was going to say South Florida, but
I think that was shooting variance. I know you put out the shot quality graphic and like
won by 19.
Like I did feel like that was more of horrific shooting than it was they weren't game. Like for instance, Troy was just not game.
Like Troy got blown out. Oh, I'll give you one more. Georgia.
I had their list. So I put, they trailed last year, Gonzaga, 27-3, and this was worse. They allowed 102 points with only 9 made threes and 9 free throws. They allowed 66 points in the paint. They allowed an 18-0 run to start the second half. And most importantly, they closed on a 17-2 run to lose by 25. That game, like, and that was at that point where, because that was Thursday night, right?
That was Thursday night.
That was Thursday night, and we'd kind of had,
that was the late game, and I was actually kind of pumped about it. I'm like, oh,
that was the game we were putting a lot of faith in that, because late, I think we also had Houston shellacking Idaho.
We had Penn and correct. Illinois was in that window.
And then Gonzaga, Kennesaw State wound up being close-ish. We were really depending on that game to kind of carry the night, and that game was over with like 5 minutes in.
I forget who the analyst was. It might have been Austin Crozier. I was listening to Gonzaga, Kennesaw State driving home on Thursday night, and Austin Crozier goes, this is the worst game Gonzaga's played all year, and they lost a game by 40 points.
And they lost to Portland.
And they lost to Portland. He was like, this is a bad game by Gonzaga.
Very, very much so. All right, let's go with...
Who's yours?
Oh, Georgia.
I left you St. Mary's. I thought you'd give me...
No. They did exactly what I expected.
I was thinking of you. I was like,
I told you on Tuesday, like, it was a legacy play.
I know. You nailed it. I mean, I was thinking of you. I'm like, man, you hit this one to perfection.
This is nothing new. I've been watching this team play basketball since 2007. More on that in our coach in our coaching carousel. Most outstanding player. Is there any way it's not Acuff?
I don't think so.
I know you could give, you could consider DeBansa, because DeBansa, though they lost, no one's blaming him.
No, yeah, no, he did. I mean, I guess Otega Owe in the first game.
Yeah, I was also thinking. Didn't Reed have like a 31-27?
He did. Yeah, he went for 31-27 against Furman. Terrence Reed. I think if you were talking about the totality of both games, hitting the big shots, I think you got to give it to Acuff. But individual games, I think Owe and Reed are certainly in the conversation. I mean, Owe did something, I think, is the first player since Bird to have 35-8-7 in a tournament game.
Well, because that game was on during the show, we'd pointed out he had, what did he finish with, 34?
I think he's had 35.
35. And I think 28 of it came after halftime.
Yeah.
I mean, it was absolutely nuts. And then,
Of course, he hits the shot.
Correct.
He hits the bank in three. Which at that point you knew Santa Clara was definitely not going to cover.
Best game.
Ooh. I think Nebraska Vandy.
So I selected that as well. I still don't know how that shot didn't go in.
Oh my God. That thing. I mean, and when you take a picture of it, I mean, the ball is halfway in the cylinder.
I do not understand how the shot didn't go in.
If that shot goes in, is that a top five NCAA tournament moment?
So,
because it's a second round game, right? So I think we had this conversation.
Well, this is one of my buddies asked this, and I don't know. And he's an Ole Miss fan. And his Bryce question Drew? Is, why does the Bryce Drew shot resonate when, like, Jalen Suggs' shot, which is in the Final Four, I was trying to think, I was like, well,
it's because it's Cinderella.
It's something about Valpo.
Yeah, it has to do, Gonzaga was a 1, UCLA was an 11. And, like, I totally agree with your buddy. We do not talk about the Jalen Suggs game winner at all. Now, they were tied, correct?
I believe that's correct. The other difference is with Drew, there's 2.5 seconds left. I also think part of it is it was a great play. You know, the pass, then the flipping it to him, and it's for the win.
And
down two.
Maybe I'm crazy. I think it's Cinderella, the play, and also the celebration, how he just leaps onto the floor and they dogpile him.
But Suggs' celebration was great too. He fired it and ran straight to the scorer's table, and like that was a great celebration.
It was.
I think there's another part of it.
Jalen Suggs, I think we need to do a deep dive. The Jalen Suggs buzzer beater is wildly underrated. I think your buddy's onto something.
So the other aspect, I think, of the Valpo play, that's also an era where we did not watch every single game.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's still kind of a highlight era where CBS had all the games, but it was regional. And you had to buy the DirecTV package to even get it. What was it called? Was it called March Madness? I'm trying to remember. That was big time when the rights moved to DirecTV. And
I'm trying to remember exactly. I'm trying to remember if that game was on during the day.
It was I can tell you what it was, because I took a radio into school. It was definitely the 12, whatever. It was the early game.
It was the early, because I think that was another moment where you had like the telephone of Valpo. Like, did you hear how that game ended?
Yes. There's definitely a myth of it.
And then they made a run to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of it. I still think,
by the way,
I wonder if highlights are just, are we just desensitized now?
That Midwest region in 1998.
Kansas lost to Rhode Island.
Yep. The 12, 13, 11, and 10 all won their first round game.
Yeah.
And Rhode Island played Stanford in the regional final.
Shout out,
the Collins twins?
No. That's before them. Coached the Warriors, maybe? Montgomery?
That was the year I remember Duke blew a 18-point lead in the Elite Eight.
Oh, I hated that for them. that's a real, real shame.
That was Wojo.
Slap the floor, baby. Yeah. Have I told you my... who's our Purdue guy? Braden Smith. Braden Smith's white trash Wojo.
Does got a bushy beard.
But it's not even like a full beard. It's like a... He's doing too much with it. But like it's the same type thing. Do you have a stock up?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll give it to Nebraska. You know, this is a team that I thought as the year, I mean, they started hot, so I was ready to fade them, and then they started to trail off. And the fact that they're in the Elite Eight and they're a favorite to go to the they're in the Sweet 16 favorite to go to the Elite Eight, yeah, I'll give it to Nebraska.
So we were talking about this on the show last week, and I'm going to give it to Nebraska too. Nebraska's fade, I think, was more shows like in the end, like you, if you're not a traditional team, like we're just going to keep not believing in you. Their losses were, because I think everyone points out they lost 6 of their last 12. Mm-hmm. 3-point loss to Michigan, in which they led for most of the game. The game was in Ann Arbor.
And they didn't have Rink Mast in that game.
Correct. They lost to Illinois by 9, but that was another game that was close. And then in Illinois, that's one of the few games Illinois pulled away.
And I think, if I remember correctly, Mast returned. But remember, he lost like 12 pounds.
Correct.
Yeah, so he was terrible in that game.
Yes, only played 26 minutes and was he had, I believe, did he finish with more points?
And they didn't have Frager in, I think, the Michigan game either. So they were missing a couple pieces.
So then they lose to Purdue in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to Iowa by 5 on the road. And then they got killed by UCLA when they did the USC-UCLA road trip. But they split.
Mick doesn't lose at home.
Correct. And then they lost to Purdue in the tournament. Like, every single one of the teams that they lost to is still standing. And only one of those, well, I'm sorry, UCLA. UCLA lost on Sunday, but every single one was a tournament team that at least won one game. Like, I had started to think perception on them was wrong. I don't know what to make of UConn. I saw shades of my puppies on Sunday.
I've been kind of down on UConn this year, and I bet UCLA in that game. Now, I thought Bilodeau was going to play. He did not, obviously. But regardless, when you've got Caravan doing that, uh-oh.
Well, the what I saw shades of, they smelled blood, and then they started to go on that little run –